Hello everyone, and welcome to minute 28 of season 10 of Movie Room Minute, the daily podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again is Bubba Wheat from It's Time to Rewind. Welcome back to the show, Bubba.
Hey, yeah.
So minute 28 begins with Garber really showing that he knows his stuff, and ends with Kaz seeing the light. So we left things off yesterday with Blue finally explaining the situation to Carell and everyone else, eavesdropping on the conversation, and then we had Garber basically take over and show everyone that there's a reason why he's the top cop of that area. And so he was in the process of telling Patron what he needs to do. And he says, and hooked it up into the IRT master circuit, will ya? And all units stand by on the double. Call in city cops. Put it on a 911 so the computer gets it. Now, I like the fact that he calls it a 911 instead of calling it a 911, because this was... I mean, I've spent more time on a different season talking about 911. I believe it was Die Hard that I talked about the history of 911 and stuff like that. But you know, back then in 1974, you couldn't just dial 911 and get the police. You know, but the fact that he calls it a 911 instead of a 911 is probably because. I believe the actual call sign is 9-11, which then makes sense of why you would call it a 9-11 as opposed to calling it a 911. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure exactly what was happening in 1974 with the code 9-11 or whatever, but so there's a 9-911 Act that was passed in 1999 by the FCC, which it made the code 911 the universal emergency number for all telephone services. You know, it's something that is used also on radios and everything like that. It's not just phones. They even added it to VoIP and mobile satellite services and telematics and text telephone devices and things like that. So it's interesting. I don't remember what the idea was back in the 70s about this, but I mean, obviously, if he mentions it, it means it was something at the time.
Hmm.
You know,
my guess is the act was something that expanded it to make sure that it was available on like all cell phones and that,
right?
Because if I remember, I don't think early cell phones had 911 service.
Okay, so the history of having an emergency telephone number actually started in the UK in 1937, where they would have the if you dialed the code 999, you can get national emergency services in the UK. And I believe that is still in effect today. So we're talking, it was 88 years since that. In the U.S., they started using the 911 service in 1968 in Alabama. And then Canada adopted it in 1972. And basically the U.S. Were trying to develop some sort of nationwide emergency service number back in 1957, when the National Association of Fire Chiefs recommended they have a single number in order to report fires. They decided to in 1964. There was a famous rape and murder case of a woman named Kitty Genovese, and that increased the urgency that they needed some sort of central emergency number, because they claim that nobody called the police, despite hearing a lot of people being in the vicinity and being able to hear her cries for help. And they claim that part of the problem was is that people, it was too complicated to call the police, so they need to find a way to make things a little more a little easier for people to do it. So in 1967, the President's Commission of Law Enforcement and Administration of Justice, they recommended creating a single number that could be used nationwide for reporting emergencies. And so in late 1967, the FCC met with AT&T to try and figure out what the number they would agree upon, and they actually agreed upon the 911, which was chosen because it's a simple, easy to remember code. It can be dialed very quickly, because people were still using rotary phones at the time. So to dial 999 like they do in England would take a little bit longer. So therefore, they decided that they would put two ones there, which made it a little easier to do. And the fact that it had one and then one, it was considered a special number. Like you have 411 where you can call information and things like that. So it designated it as a special number for the whole thing. And at the time, it was only via the Bell System telephone companies. And as I stated earlier, Alabama was the first company that had the first test of the 911 number. And in March of 68, that's when they started in other major cities around the country for the whole thing. There are some places like in Chicago, they had access in already in 1976, and but then in a lot of the suburbs, they only got 911 in 1981 where it would work. And it only actually became in the early 90s, that's when it became universal that everyone started using it. By 1979, 26% of the US 26% of the US had places where you can dial the number. In 87, it increased to 50%, and it became 93% in 2000. And there actually still are places that you can't use it. As of now, there's only 98.9% of the U.S. That has access to dialing 911, where it'll get you the police. Interestingly enough, I was hoping that this article would talk about New York, but it doesn't. So I can't tell you when. Obviously, it was working in 73, 74. Because again, I don't think they would have just added that in here if it wasn't something that was already known that's possible. And at this point, we get a shot of Rico, and he goes, "Hey, what's up, Z?" And he goes, "You won't believe it." He goes, "You know me, I'll believe anything." He goes, "A train's been hijacked." He goes, "I don't believe it." Again, it goes back to what you were talking about yesterday, how they do a really nice job of just throwing in these one-liners for these characters to play off one another, mostly, which works really well. You can tell that these two characters have known each other for a while. They didn't just meet yesterday.
Yeah, and it's I think the timing of it is great, and they don't call attention to it too much either. It still flows at a nice pace where it's just like standard dialogue. It doesn't feel sitcom-y where it's like they're waiting for the laugh track.
Exactly. Because I think the point is it's supposed to feel like normal people. So you don't need to have the laugh track type of thing. It's just to give us a little smile along the way, as you said, to lighten the mood a little bit as the story moves along and flows. So, I like the way that they do that. And at this point, the scene changes, and we're back at the 28th Street station, and we see Kaz come through. And he's walking behind where all these passengers are waiting for the train. I love that you can see a vending machine, but it goes by too quickly and very blurry. You can't tell what candies are there, but you can definitely see that it is boxes of candies that are in there. And Kaz is not happy. He walks past everybody gruff, and a woman tries to say something to him, and he just politely moves her out of the way as he keeps walking down. And then he ends up seeing a conductor, and he goes, "When did the power go?" He goes, "Hey, conductor, when did the power go?" And the conductor looks at him and goes, "Who wants to know?" And he goes, "Me, the supervisor of the Grand Central Tower, wants to know." He goes, "Oh, yes, sir. A couple of minutes ago." He goes, "Hey, what happened down there? Man go under?" And Kaz looks at him and goes, "Who wants to know?" So again, it's a nice jab back at this guy for the whole thing. So they say man go under. Obviously, I'm assuming you understand what the connotation is here. They're basically asking if the train had actually run over somebody. Is that what's causing the problem right now? So I decided to do a little bit of research into the New York City subway system fatalities. So obviously there are numerous reasons for it. You have accidental falls, you have suicides, you have violent crime. Sometimes someone is struck by a train, when they're walking where they shouldn't be, things like that. So I actually found an article that discusses all about the subway related fatalities in New York from 2008 to 2021. So how many people during that time period? So we're talking about 13 time period, 13 year time period. How many people do you think are counted as fatalities in the New York City subway system?
Let's see. 13 years. Wouldn't be surprised if it was maybe 25 a year. So maybe like around a couple hundred.
838 fatalities. Okay, and what percentage of that? Well, actually, of the various, I guess, methods of fatalities that I mentioned earlier, which one do you think has the most fatalities from? So you have accidents, undetermined deaths, suicides, and homicides.
I'd imagine accidental would be the highest.
Actually, the highest is actually suicides. The number of suicides of the 838, 409 of them were suicides, which is 48.8%. Then you have accidents, which have 277, which is 33%. Undetermined deaths is 143 at 17.1%. And despite the fact that we see a lot on TV and movies about people committing homicides and like pushing people in front of trains and stuff like that, there is actually only 9 people that died that way in that 13-year period, which is 1.1% of all fatalities.
Yeah, I actually have a story. Whenever I first moved to Chicago area, I would take the train to work, the Metra, from go into the suburbs, into the city. And I was on a train that was involved with a suicide fatality.
Oh,
That's
wow.
yeah, and it delayed. Like, I didn't know. I kind of like heard through the chatter because it's, the train was stopped for a good like 2 hours
Oh, wow.
before we were able to start moving again. Yeah.
And were you in a place where you were able to call somebody to tell them that you were going to be late?
Yeah, I believe it was on my way home from work.
Okay. So it wasn't that you were stuck on the way to to an interview or to a, or to an important meeting or something like that. So yeah, okay, that's good. So yeah, Kaz gets this information from this conductor, and I like the way that he responds to him and who wants to know.
Yeah, again, it feels very New York.
Yes, and then he says, "No, nobody's hurt." And then Kaz starts walking into the tunnel, and then there's a shot of Kaz is no longer there, and we see a policeman that's standing there, and someone comes up to him and says, "What's going on?" He goes, "I don't know what's going What happened?" He goes, "Nothing's happening, lady. Nothing's happened, lady. Was anybody killed?" "No, nobody's killed." So the character, he we're gonna get a lot of him in the future. It's the character's name is Patrolman Jones, Patrolman James. He's played by an actor named Nathan George, who was born in 1936, passed away in 2017 at the age of 80, and he only has 13 IMDb credits, which is pretty interesting. He was in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and he was in Serpico, and this movie. Those are the three that stood out for me. I'm it's been a while since I've seen One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, but apparently he played a predominant character because he got paid $75,000 for the role. Maybe I should probably rewatch that just to refresh my memory to see. And I'll say, "Hey, that's Patrolman James." Who knows? But yeah, he's gonna have a lot more to do later on in this movie. I like the way that he has to deal with all these commuters who are causing problems, and Kaz then goes down into the tunnel itself, and he sees a group of people walking towards him, flashing a light, and that's where this minute will end. So, did you have anything else you wanted to add about this particular minute?
The only th other thing that I noticed that you didn't mention is that it's the camera switches to a handheld camera, which I think that really helps add to the chaos of the scene, and especially the dichotomy because this guy, he doesn't know that it's a hostage situation. He just thinks that it's either a malfunction or just a crazy motor man. It's not until another minute or two that the information gets to them that it's a hostage situation.
What's very interesting, I just noticed this, is I wonder where Patrolman James is standing, because on the platform when Kaz comes in, there's a guy with a blue jacket which has like an orange lining, and then they give us the impression, at least, that James is closer to where Kaz is, as he's talking to the conductor, but then when we see all of the people around Patrolman James, we see the same guy with his jacket and orange lining to the whole thing. So it's interesting because it doesn't really give us the geography well enough. We just know that they're both in the same area, the same vicinity, but we don't know exactly who's. I mean, we know that Kaz has now gone into the, into the tunnel itself, but
Yeah, they're all on the 28th Street platform.
exactly. All right, excellent. So every Wednesday we have a segment called Hijack Hump Day, where my guest will give their top five movies that feature hijacks. So once again, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up? I hope this time you actually have five.
I do, but I was really surprised because I was looking up lists of, famous hijacking movies, and I was like looking at them, and it's like I have not seen any of these movies,
Oh, wow.
so I had to dig a little bit deeper, and these are movies, and I don't think most of them would be considered hijacking movies, but they all do feature some sort of hijacking, a hijacking scene at least.
Okay, that's fair enough.
So my number five, I'm going to go with the 2013 Lone Ranger movie. The movie as a whole is not that great, but I agree with most people who at least somewhat enjoyed it, that said, that the third act train chase, which involves at least one stolen train from what I remember, so that would be considered a train hijacking, but that whole train scene, that's like practically the entire third act of the movie, is just fantastic. It's a great action set piece. It's so well choreographed and everything.
Okay.
And then my number four, I'm going to go with Speed, which I think it's kind of an unconventional hijacking movie because the bus is technically hijacked, even though Dennis Hopper is not actually on the bus itself, but he does hijack it with the bomb, and he's in control of it, even though he is not physically in control of it. And then my number three, I'm going to go with Die Hard 2, which that involves a hijacked plane. And my number two, I'm going to go with again, this is a scene, and again, it's such a big scene that's kind of what people talked about, and that is the opening scene in The Dark Knight Rises with Bane hijacking the plane, and that just incredible stunt work with the largely practical effects, stuff that they actually did with real planes, which is insane whenever you think about
Yes. They're out of their skull.
it. And then my number one is another train hijacking movie, and I think this one is consider you can consider the entire movie to be about them hijacking the train, and that is Snowpiercer. I
I thought you were
love
going to
that
say
movie.
Back to the Future 3.
I did consider that. I think that would have been sixth on my list. That was another one that I did see on like one list, and I was like, oh yeah, that does feature a train hijacking.
Exactly. Now, up until now, nobody's used that one it's just when you were describing it, and I was like, oh, you're talking about Back to the Future 3. All right. So thank you very much for that list. So once again, we will play the daily game of Name That Remake. I'm going to spin the wheel. Let's see what remake you get this time. And the wheel spins around. Okay. Let's see what's the best way to describe this one. It's one of those things when you need to try and think of a way to describe something by not using the same word.
Well, give me the years first. Let my brain, even though I'm terrible at years, so that just usually gives me no help.
Okay, so the original movie came out in 1980, and the remake came out in 2009. Okay, any guesses yet?
No.
Four teenagers are sent to a special high school in order to try to find out what they're really good at.
Yeah, I feel like you're avoiding something that would give it away.
I'm definitely avoiding something that would definitely give it away.
80 and 2009. Yeah, I've got nothing. I need something else.
Okay. I wonder if this is going to completely give it away, but we'll have to wait and see. It was also a TV show for a number of years.
For high schoolers.
It was a TV show for 6 seasons in the 80s, from 82 to 87.
So the movie preceded the original movie preceded the TV
TV.
show. I feel like I used to be so good at these, because I maybe it's just the wavelength, because I know, like, Jason Soto, he in a lot of his podcasts and stuff, he would have the Netflix game where he would give a very vague and often misleading plot description of a movie, and I feel like I was always good at those, but now I've lost my knack for it, I guess. Yeah, I'm not coming up with anything.
Okay, the tagline for the 1980 movie is, "If they've really got what it takes, it's going to take everything they've got." Does that help at all?
No, I'm thinking this might be something I'm not familiar with.
I would be very, very surprised if you're not familiar with it. It's possible. Okay, the only actor, as far as I know, that was in both the movie and the TV show was Debbie Allen.
Debbie
That helps out.
Allen. No, it does not.
You know who Debbie Allen is?
The name's not ringing a bell.
Okay, the school that they work in is a, or that they're studying in is a performing arts school.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So that would be Fame.
Yes.
Yeah. I have actually seen the original and the remake movies.
The thing that always gets me on the original is that one of the main characters is the guy who played Robert Romano on ER for many seasons. Paul McCrane, who in ER he ended up losing his arm. He got chopped off by a helicopter. So,
And I
yeah.
believe this, similar to Bad News Bears, that was a movie that I watched both of them after the remake had come out.
Okay, makes sense. The one thing I liked about the remake, I'm not a fan of the remake at all. The one thing I liked about it is that Kelsey Grammer's in it. But that's it.
It's been so long. It didn't really resonate with me too much. I can't really remember anything about it.
Okay, I mean, I also I'm a little bit older than you, so I did grow up with Fame being on TV every week. My sisters would always watch it, and so there were episodes that I've seen. I was always familiar with Fame. All right, excellent. So, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Bubbleweed?
Sure. One project that I tend to keep forgetting to talk about the as something that I put a lot of work in. We're both part of the Movies by Minutes community, and there is the website, themoviesbyminutes.com. But one thing that I decided that this community needed is a wiki, and so I built the Movies by Minutes wiki, which can be found at moviesbyminutes.fandom.com. And that is, it's basically kind of the wiki version of the Movies by Minutes website, although there is a few podcasts that are listed on the website that are not listed on the wiki because they're either never started or they're no longer available to be found online, that like the episodes have disappeared through being in a like on a paid feed and they stopped paying the fee. Or and that there's also several podcasts that I have on the wiki that are not on the website, and you can look by movie, if you're interested in the movie to see what podcast is done, or you can list them by podcasts. You can it's not complete. I'd say it's only maybe 10 to 20% complete, but I also have a fair number of podcasters. So if you're interested in a specific host or frequent guest, you can look up the podcaster and on the wiki as well and see what podcast they've been a part of.
Oh, wow, that is so cool. I mean, I've always appreciated the fact that you have it because all my seasons are on there. So yeah, it's much appreciated that you've done it. Yeah, do you have a list there of which ones are currently inactive?
Yeah, I do have a tag for each podcast. I and sometimes they can be in multiple categories, but any podcast that has completed a movie, whether it's a multi-season podcast that's completed a movie in their earlier season, you can look at completed podcasts if they are active right now. You can look up the active podcasts, which, in theory, that means they should still be currently releasing episodes, although I'm not quite as active in maintaining it. So sometimes I go, 6 months to a year in between updates. So the active tag might be a little out of date depending on when you check it. And then I also have hiatus podcasts, which are basically any podcast that's started a movie and did not finish it, whether or not they have completely,
Boo, boo.
yeah, whether or not they have completely abandoned it, or if they have intentions to come back at some point in time, I've just labeled them all as being on hiatus.
Okay, fair enough. All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@movierob.com. Net. So, until tomorrow, achoo.
Gesundheit.